everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and Dom this week is actually off gallivanting about in Spain. So joining me in his place is someone you guys know as a blogger for Rob Has a Website. And she's also my favorite British person ever. It's Sarah Freeman. Sarah, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be here. I'm really excited to be a replacement Brit. This is my grand scheme now. I'm going to just replace Dom completely.
Yeah, I'm guessing I'm going to just modulate your voice and no one's going to know. I shouldn't have even told people who you were.
I don't think you can get me down to Dom's register. That's a pretty scary thought.
Yeah. By the way, I know you're not a Big Brother Canada watcher. Have you looked into any Nikki Graham impersonating?
No.
Do you know, as a British person, who Nikki Graham is, by the way?
Nikki, I believe, was on Big Brother the year after I moved to America, so I just missed her. I did used to watch Big Brother UK, but she is after my time.
Oh, interesting. But you don't watch Big Brother US at all, right?
No, because it's a completely different show.
Yeah, probably a smart decision on your part at this point. But Sarah, as I mentioned, you've been blogging for quite a long time now over at Rob Has a Website. How long have you been blogging, by the way?
It's coming up to 4 years in October, which is a scary, scary thought.
What was your first season that you did there?
Philippines.
Philippines, amazing. While we're on it, where can people be finding you, like on Twitter, and find all of your blogs and so forth?
Oh, okay. So on Twitter, I am at ChanonSarah, ChanonSarah. And you can find me at robhasawebsite.com. I do have an author page.
Is there any kind of, there's no like shortened link, like / Sarah Freeman or anything?
Hang on. Let me just look that up because.
Sure.
Okay. robhasawebsite.com/author/Sarah Freeman.
Okay, there you go. Really good stuff. Sarah, I guess let's get into it right now. I just met you this time about 72 hours ago. We were sitting there watching the live know-it-alls. Did you have a good time during that?
Of course I did. It was so good. It was really fun meeting you. Especially, again, I'm meeting you before Dom did, so this is, you know, all part of my master plan.
Yeah, I met a lot of people before I met Dom, and I'm suspecting that trend will continue. I definitely do hope to get to another live know-it-alls. I certainly had a really, really good time getting to meet you and everyone else. I swear, literally every single person that I talked to there was super, super cool, and it was such a fun time, and I would really recommend that anyone go who hasn't gone yet.
Yeah, can I just ask, what did you say to Natalie? Because I saw you'd updated your profile picture on Facebook, and I really, sorry, I missed that conversation.
Actually, Natalie, I didn't really even talk to. Natalie was one of the people that, right after the episode wrapped up, she and Jeremy were just like standing against a wall with lines of people lining up to take pictures of. I do know what I said to Natalie, which is, I have really shaky hands. Is there someone behind us who could take this picture for me? So that's what I said to Natalie, but she was really cool. She was really fun. And also I mentioned I got a picture with Jeremy right there. That was awesome. And they also hung out for a long time at the after party. Everyone, like Rob and Steven were there for a long time. Josh Wigger was out till 3 a.m. That was really fun. So it was all around just a really, really great time. And once again, I really, really enjoyed literally every single person that I talked to. Every single person was cool.
Yeah. And I was not talking to nearly as many people as Colin because I'm quite a bit more introverted. But I also had a great time, and I thoroughly recommend it. That was my second know-it-alls, and hopefully not the last.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely love to get back out there for sure. Sarah, I guess before we get into this new episode, we are, of course, back to talk about this latest wild episode, RIP Debbie. I am so heartbroken. We'll get into all of that. I know you are, too. But before we get into that, what have been like your just kind of general takes on the season so far? Because it's been really good, right? Like, where was all the hype?
I know. It's been so much fun. It was all this most brutal season ever. And it's been really, really good. It's been really entertaining. Everybody out there seems like they're having a blast, despite the fact they're all dying. So, yeah. And I like it. I love these seasons that Jeff doesn't hype. So carry on not hyping them.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what it is. He feels like coming off of Worlds Apart, which I think everyone kind of recognized was very overhyped. Yeah. And then Cambodia, which was justifiably just amazingly hyped, because I think most people are on board with that being a fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Cambodia. It's just a completely different style of season to Koh Rong.
But oh, no question.
They do sort of represent in their own ways what is so good about Survivor. You know, you can have one really game crazy season like Cambodia, then you can have one like Koh Rong where I don't know if anybody's playing this amazing, brilliant game, but they're all doing these things that are very good or very bad, and it's all very Survivor-ish. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if this season, maybe they had, like, the opposite of what I think may have been the case with Worlds Apart, where I think kind of on paper, just coming away from that, having just seen it as it was being filmed, if I'm Jeff Probst, I'm thinking, oh, this is incredible. All three tribes went to Tribal Council before the merge, right? Or before the swap, I think that's right. And then, like, Jen plays an idol at the merge to save herself, and several crazy things happen. Mike goes on an immunity run to, like, steal the game, and steal the game, but I think for people like Jeff, that's, like, an amazing underdog story, like, come from behind, never been done before. And I think, like, if you just think about it on paper, that does sound like a really good season. And just on TV, for whatever reason, while there were plenty of good episodes, it just wasn't nearly what I think they probably anticipated. I think maybe this season they went out there filming and came away with, like, oh my God, we had so many people get medevac, the conditions were ridiculous, who knows what else could potentially have gone into it. But maybe just without knowing all of the confessionals and how it was all going to come together, they really didn't anticipate that it would be this good.
Of course, Worlds Apart just got very controversial, so a lot of the fans all the fans have started arguing, and that just made it difficult sort of watch and enjoy on the level that we normally do. And then with Ko Rong, there's nothing controversial really about it. I mean, there's plenty to debate, but I don't think there's any, maybe a bit with the bullying, but the bullying I don't think has been up to what we've seen on Survivor in the past. It's been quite minor, so... Yeah, it's just been it's been a fun season. That's the thing about it.
Right. I mean, we certainly do have, like, this episode that we'll talk about shortly. The whole sabotage thing, and, like, that's certainly, like, an ugly side of Survivor. But I think in Worlds Apart, it became almost to the extent that, like, the game wasn't even what was being talked about. It was the bullying and so forth, particularly with, like, Shireen and Will and Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. And who was being sexist and who wasn't, and yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also wondering, like, just how much Jeff Probst in particular has to do with no hype for this season, and, like, what we can even particularly make of that. Like, the initial takeaway for me was that a woman obviously wins, because he typically seems to be in love with most of the male winners.
Yeah, but Kagayan wasn't hyped.
That's true, that's true, but I think maybe with someone like Tony, the obvious comparison, I think, is Russell Hance, where they just hit it. They take the game totally by the throat. I think maybe after having gone through what they went through with Russell, they probably weren't certain how the audience would react to Tony, who was the ultimate winner of that season.
Yeah, that's true. I remember my mother thought he was so obnoxious. That was the last
time
I watched. That relates at all, but...
Right, I mean, even entering the finale, I personally thought Tony had very little shot of winning, just because I didn't think they would present a winner in that type, like screaming in llama at Cass or whatever.
Yeah, and he still sort of, I mean, he had far and away the most confessionals that season, but we all thought it was just because he was a big character.
Right, like, I mean, Russell blew everyone out in confessionals on his first two seasons as well.
Yeah, he was definitely edited very differently, but I think they've been kind of moving away from, well, I don't know, Mike and Jeremy, I suppose, are quite standard edits for winners, but I do feel like they're trying to change up the edit a bit. Certainly this season's been very interesting. So.
Yeah, for sure. I've actually really enjoyed the way they've been edited. It almost reminds me of Philippines, which I think got kind of a unique, and I know uniqueness is binary, but Philippines really stands out, I guess, as having almost like a more cinematic edit than I guess they typically give to it. And I feel like this is the same way, or at least several scenes have come across the same way. For instance, the ones that stand out in my mind are obviously that big reward challenge where everyone went down and Caleb got medevaced, which was just this big, like almost like Hollywood level endeavor, with like the chopper coming in and everyone running around freaking out, like nothing we've ever seen on Survivor before. And also just like the sepia tone shot of Scott putting out the fire and the smoke all coming up in his face. Like, I think that kind of stuff is stuff we just, again, like cinematic almost level stuff that we don't typically see on Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a case of the opportunity for it, but yeah,
right.
It's been good. And I mean, mostly what I've liked about it is that we've got to know everybody's story. You know, every single one of the pre-merge boots had like a couple of episodes of building themselves up, so there was nobody who really popped up just for one episode and got voted out, except for Darnell. But you
right, Yeah, of course. And yeah, I mean, as we talk through this episode, I think honestly, seven out of the eight people left. There are eight people left now, right? Yes, seven out of the eight people left. There's still plenty to say about them. I think Joe maybe a little less to say, but I think there's really a lot to dive into with everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into that, though, one person I do really want to dive into about with you, just because he was also an RHAP blogger, is Nick. I would love to hear about your experience with Nick and how you thought he came across on the show and all of that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's a bit weird because I have like a completely different context for Nick, because I talked to him quite a bit during Cagayan, and we got on during that season. It was fun. It was really weird watching Kim, and because obviously I think the Nick I know is more like the Nick we see in the Ponderosa videos.
How so?
Well, you know, that kind of more self-deprecating and not
like less deliberate, almost maybe.
Yeah, not playing up the arrogant side of his character and giving Jeff sound bites and things like that. So,
well, were you surprised to see him play it up for the cameras though?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he came across a bit like he did in his blogs, as opposed to when he was just sort of talking in the comments to us. So, yeah, it wasn't totally different, but I think, you know, Nick's a really smart person, he's a really fun person, and I think the three episodes that he really had in the show before he got voted out, he had, like, before the merge, and then his boot episode. I think they did a really good sort of representation of the good and bad sides of his game. You know, the merge episode, he was just great value. He was sort of in on everything, and he was able to explain all that in confessionals and have some really good insights. And then we saw like the bad sides of him with the mishandling Michelle and everybody just generally getting pissed off with him, especially in the boot episode. So I think we got quite a good. I mean, it's always going to be like a really narrow and heavily edited snapshot of a game. But I do think he got a decent representation of his game, both the good and the bad. So maybe he'd disagree with me.
Well, one thing I was wondering is, do you feel like Nick might regret having gone out there, or do you feel like he's going to embrace coming across as the villain?
Oh, he's definitely going to embrace it. I have no worries about
okay.
That's just who he's comfortable being.
You know. Okay.
That's you know, like I said, in his blogs, he tended to, you know, act up as a jerk and stuff, and he can be a jerk. He's like a really great person and a jerk at the same time, so.
All right, that's what I like to hear. Was there anyone that we've lost so far that really stood out to you? Like Liz, for instance, potentially, that her cousin was there at the live know-it-alls.
Yeah.
Striking resemblance.
Yes. Liz never really made that much of an impact on me. I mean, it was kind of interesting because of Stephen Fishback Association.
Right.
But no, Jen was like one of my preseason favorites. She was my pick to win, so that panned out really well. I was really sorry she went so early. But I don't think I was too over-attached to any of the pre-merge boots. I think by and large, I was happy to... Not happy to see them go, but, you know, I didn't feel like we were missing out on some amazing storyline by seeing them go that early. I feel like we've got a really good bunch left.
So. Yeah, definitely. One thing I definitely need to hear your take on, we've had a lot of talk about it these last couple of episodes, is the idea of women's alliances in Survivor. What constitutes a women's alliance, and why should we stop thinking about them?
Well, what constitutes a women's alliance seems to... Well, it's perspective. I mean, Sydney thinks she's in a women's alliance, and I don't know whether the other women do. So, for example, I think Aubrey's ride or die with Joe, and I think certainly Julia, but probably Michelle as well, are much more flexible about going back to the guys if they need to, whereas I think Sydney is... I'm going to take Aubrey, Julia, and Michelle, and I can control these women, and I'm going to go to the end with them if I can.
So Sydney's viewing it as a women's alliance, and they're just viewing it as like a women's voting bloc?
Yeah, that's probably how you put it. And
okay.
And actually, one thing I want to point out about where this game's ended up is As of Debbie's vote out, all the women are younger than all of the men left in the game. So there's a lot of an age association going on there, which is one of the reasons why this Women's Alliance has come together, probably, because certainly for Sydney, Julia and Michelle, who are all under 25, whereas the youngest man is Jason, who's 31, you know, it's a lot easier for them to play against each other and manipulate each other than it is for them to manipulate men who are 10 to 20, well, in Joe's case, 50 years older than them.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I hadn't even considered that yet. I guess let's get into this episode and how all this started out. And, of course, the big early talking point is this sabotage where Scott and Jason were angry at the result of the last vote, and they feel like the tribe has turned on them, so they're going to turn on the tribe, and they steal the tools and like put the fire out constantly, basically making life as miserable as possible. And I do first of all think that this is very different than like the Will Sims Dan Foley thing. I think that's why it's not becoming the narrative of like bullying necessarily and more of sabotage, because they're not making it personal. It seems like they're just angry on a game level. Do you agree with that, first of all?
Oh, yeah, they're not making any personal attacks on anybody. They're pretty angry at all the women, and they're making some snarky comments. But, you know, we're not getting, you have no soul or anything like that. It's just basically throwing the toys out of the sandbox, isn't it? So.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of doing that in general? Like, we've seen it. Sandra, actually, I think this was pointed out at the Live Know-It-Alls, did something. I don't think she dumped stuff on the fire, but she, like, stole the fish or whatever. We've seen sabotage way early in Survivor history. I think Jeff Varner, actually, in Australia, dumped out all the fish, like, when he knew he was getting voted out or something. Maybe I'm confusing those two stories. Brandon Hance, famously. Jatia, famously. What do you make of that in general? Like, it's obviously allowed within the rules, but it seems like complete suicide, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting because Scott and Jason were coming up with a strategic rationale for it. And, I mean, you could argue that side, that they're going to weaken them emotionally by making camp life hell for them because they feel that in themselves they are stronger psychologically and can deal with the hardships better than the girls can. But I can't see that, you know, anybody taking that as anything but them having a temper tantrum. And that's hurting them with everybody left in the game, who they hope to be their jurors. It's probably going to hurt them even with Neil and Nick, who weren't there, because it must be, I can't imagine you sit there on the jury bench and you hear this account of what's been happening at camp and you're thinking, wow, Jason Scott, that is a great game move. Go you two. You're getting my vote there. You're thinking, stop it. Buckle down and play.
Yeah, I think I would have probably a really hard time giving a jury vote to someone who did that, unless they had like a really good reason. But I do think actually they got kind of an almost unintended benefit potentially out of this, where maybe people were thinking that, we saw Aubrey voice this, I think, where because they're being such over-the-top kind of douchebags to the rest of the tribe, they're doing it because they want to draw the votes on them because they have the idols and they're going to play them to save themselves and vote one of them out.
Yeah, which is what Randy did in Gabon, didn't he, when he had the fake idol?
Right, exactly. Like Colby at the Merge in Australia also drew the votes in on him because back then the tiebreaker was previous votes and he had no votes against him.
Yeah, that's exactly what Aubrey was saying, yeah. And so, yeah, that was the unintended benefit. And, I mean, she was right. They would have known that they had an idol anyway because Sydney must have told them.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, and they probably suspect that Ty had an idol unless they thought that Nick might have been blindsided with one.
Yeah, everyone but Debbie. Debbie seemed pretty confident that none of them could possibly have idols, which really blew my mind, considering there are still potentially three idols out there that she can't account for at all.
I don't know if you've been listening to any of Debbie's interviews or watched a Ponderosa video, but Debbie always has very firm opinions on things, and they seem to change every 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I am not taking anything Debbie says in any confessional as, you know, like a legitimate statement of events.
Okay, interesting. No, I haven't, unfortunately, been able to really get into any of the exit press because I was traveling and then had work and then slept for 20 hours.
Yeah, I haven't got through much of it, but I've skimmed enough to know that she is just saying things that does not corroborate with other things she has said at different times. So I am not worrying too much about Debbie's take on things. She is amazing, though.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the more I think about this whole sabotage thing, is dumping stuff on the fire the new, like, individual immunity necklace? Between these three guys, and also Jatia and Kageyan, the last four people who have done this survived the next vote.
Oh, maybe that's the move, then. If you feel you're on the bottom, throw something on the fire. But then people just think, oh, well, we're going to take you to the end of the goat, so... I suppose you've got to weigh up those options.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's scientifically proven at this point, that throwing stuff on the fire is how you stay safe.
Yeah, and also ruin your chances of winning.
Yeah. Well, I think the way that it's probably best to approach this whole podcast, just to get not only episode-specific stuff from you, but also to be able to just kind of freely talk about these people, where they've been, where they may be going, is talking through just kind of the sequence of events and then focusing on basically one person at a time. And while we're on Scott and Jason, let's start with Jason, who to me has been probably the most, like, complex character of the season. And he went out there wanting to play like Russell, and I was really looking forward to seeing what he was going to bring into the table, and he seems to be acting on that impulse. What's your take been on Jason?
I don't know. I mean, Jason, I thought I hated him, and then after the tribe stop, I really started liking him, and then you got the whole thing about his autistic daughter, which we knew going into the season, but obviously hearing him then talk about it is quite interesting. And I think I do generally like Jason, and I get the feeling that he's a decent person. He has a different idea of how to play the game than we might do, in that he thinks it is a good idea to hide the machete and throw things on the fire. I think he's got the wrong idea of the game, but he is playing the game the way he thinks it should be played, and you've always got to admire somebody for that. And yeah, I do think he's got a pretty clear distinction of what is okay to do in the game, but in his mind, versus what's okay to do in real life. And, you know, so I like Jason. I think that some things he's been very good about. I think his social game is actually pretty good in some respects. He and Scott don't seem to react well when things aren't going their way. I mean, this is the first time they've been out of the majority, but obviously on Brawn, they kept losing the challenges. And now they were fine after the tribe swap. They started being really fun, and then suddenly they got blindsided when Nick went home. And now they're angry, and they're starting to act up. And so that, but, so I don't know. I think we'll have to see moving forward whether they sort of regain any of their fun. But certainly there were lots of fun when they were in the majority.
Yeah, I would say 0-for-1 at handling being blindsided well, but it was, you know, they got through the vote. We'll certainly talk later on about that whole idol situation for sure. Jason is someone that stood out to me in the very early episodes as potentially someone that we were getting set up to be a losing finalist. And actually, I feel like almost despite the fact that they seem to potentially may not want me to be liking Jason that much, I'm with you. I actually do really like Jason. What do you think, though, about the idea of him possibly making it all the way to the end in that kind of Russell mold and then still losing, fulfilling his ultimate destiny?
I could see that happening. And if it does happen, I'm really glad they're not giving him the oversaturated Russell edit, because I don't think I'd like Jason in that heavier dosage.
That's a good point. Like, if he is someone who, whether it's because of the idols or because no one wants to vote him out because he's such an obvious goat or because he wins immunity a bunch of times or whatever it is, it does seem like they may have learned from what was a potential mistake with Russell, although that's probably debatable. But oversaturation, I think, is the right call. Like, if he is someone who's really influencing a ton of the way the game goes, I do like that they are really balancing in everyone but Joe to speak of.
Yeah. But although it should be noted that right now he's not having any influence over the way the game goes, you know, sort of everything they did ended up being completely redundant to the main strategy that was going on. And maybe that's why he's not getting the Russell edit. Maybe he just is irrelevant largely. He's sort of just doing his own thing and not actually able to affect anything all the way to the end. So, Sandra then.
Okay. Well, let's go over to Scott then. And actually, I believe the first thing when we met in person that you said to me was, "Scott Pollard."
I don't think I said that.
Didn't you?
I did say Scott Pollard. I thought we should get it out of the way because I was pretty sure you were going to say it at some point.
I'm pretty sure I just did an impeccable impersonation of you, by the way. That's exactly what you sound like.
Yeah.
Well, Scott here, Scott was someone who, you know, even when Jason had been, like, getting kind of buried these last couple of weeks, last week we got a confessional from Julia saying, you know, I really like Scott, and that was probably getting set up to for this episode where she's, you know, toying with voting with them. But it looked like we were still meant to be basically liking Scott from what I could tell for the most part. But this episode, it all seems to go completely haywire, where, you know, with Jason, he's doing all the sabotaging, and right in front of the group in broad daylight, he dumps out, like, 5 gallons of clean drinking water to put the fire out. Has Scott, like, officially gone all the way to the other end of the spectrum for you?
I mean, again, it's like Jason. You can see how much fun they are, you know, when... with their interactions with Ty and with each other, they can be like these great guys, and then you can see just how petty they can be and how, you know, the other side of their character. And it's really fun because these are, oh look, three-dimensional people on Survivor. That's new.
Yeah, and I mean, and just once again, the big thing for me is not only are we getting character development and seeing more than one side of people, we're seeing that from a lot of the people, the vast majority at this point of the people we've seen a lot of development from, which is something that, at least for me, was really lacking for a long time, where we, right around like the Russell era, it seemed like we would really focus on just a couple of people each season.
Yeah, and they were either good or bad, you know. There's nobody on this season who is the total hero, and there's nobody who is a total villain either, which is really refreshing.
Right, like even Peter, who I would say they eventually completely buried, did have like a good first couple of episodes to the point that he was in my winner mix early on.
Yeah, I remember the first episode, I thought, wow, Peter's not coming across anything like I thought he would, and then did get back to the Peter who I'd expected season. And Nick, I think, also got edited quite a lot as, you know, the mansplaining cocky villain, but he also had some like the merge episode, we're all like, wow, he's doing really well now. So yeah, they have showed up, you know, the different sides of everybody.
Who, based on what you were thinking preseason, has surprised you the most so far, whether they're in still or not?
Possibly Julia, because I really wrote her off preseason. I thought she seems very lovely, but you know, teenagers never make any sort of impact, and she has been going for it.
Yeah. So. Totally. Well, let's get into that, where let's go to the reward challenge, where Probst, before I guess we get into Julia specifically, Probst lets them pick their own teams, and this is where Julia steps up to volunteer to go with the guys, because it clearly splits down. Scott, Jason, Ty just need one of the girls to come over. At least for me, there is absolutely no way I would be volunteering here, and along similar lines, if I'm in Joe's position, where I'm fine with volunteering to sit out, I would always be picking the girls, or whatever the group is that I would want to stay with, which I when we get to divide our own teams for the reward challenge and half of us are going one place and half of us are going the other place, it really doesn't matter what the reward is. It really matters what your team is and who you want to be with.
Yeah. And I want to say, first of all, I'm really glad Jeff did that. And I hope they do that sort of thing again, because that was actually really interesting to watch. And before we get into Julia's decision, what about the men's decision to all stay together? Because they never even considered splitting themselves up. They were just, yeah, we three are together. So does anybody want to come with us?
I think it was because the implication almost seemed to be Jeff saying, well, hey, we weren't going to do it this way, but you guys really seem to want to play together. So I think it was kind of like once he says you guys can form your own teams, at that point they're not going to say, okay, now let's split up.
Well, I don't know. I didn't feel like he was necessarily making that implication. They certainly could have said, no, let's split up and let's not do this this way. But no, they sort of decided they were going to clump together and force one of the girls to take their stand.
Because I feel like all five of the other people should be holding their ground and saying, I will not go and join the other, not outright saying I'm absolutely not vocally going to go and team up with those three assholes, but saying just staying quiet and definitely not volunteering.
Yeah, I suppose you sort of get to the point, well, somebody has to.
Well, no, I would say they should all say, then let's go to a random draw. We won't decide on teams. They should all, none of them should be willing to do it, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a great move on Julia's part, but I can sort of see why she would do it, which is, one thing is it's giving yourself the control of that instead of waiting for somebody else to do it. It's like, oh, let's take the chance.
I would be sitting there waiting for someone else to do it and hoping someone else did it.
I just played devil's advocate here.
Because yeah, sure.
I've had the nerve to say
this is so wild to me, a British person playing devil's advocate. I don't know if I can wrap my mind around this yet. Yeah, well, let's really dive into Julia now here, because they do end up winning and going off on this reward, and so it really surprised me, but the heat immediately went on Julia, and I think this is exactly why you don't volunteer to go off with that other team. Like, I wouldn't have even expected it to be this bad, but it seemed like from that point forward, Aubrey in particular was just dead set on Julia being gone. But you mentioned Julia as someone who's actually really stood out to you as someone you underestimated. I think she totally messed up, as I've said, in this spot, but I'm totally on board with that with you. I think, like Robert or Steven, which one of them said at the Know-It-Alls, that she is probably the hardest playing teenager we've ever seen out there. And I personally really love having her on this season.
Oh yeah, easily the best teenager they've had on the show, which really low bar, but but yeah, that's what it is. It's like, I mean, I question a lot of what she's doing. I don't think she's necessarily doing it as well as she perhaps should be, and she should be more subtle. But at the same time, I love the fact that she's going for it, because I assume that she was going to maybe be more of a Natalie Tenorelli type, or even a Spencer Doom, where, you know, they're very quiet and they get lost in the shuffle. But yeah. She has been putting herself forward.
Totally. I'm totally with you. I love that she really seems to be wanting to go in there, really taking control of her own fate. And I think that went into this decision on her part. She says that she wanted to, like, get in with the guys and play the middle because she wants to sit next to Scott and Jason because no one's going to possibly vote for them. And I actually think, and this came up either at our table or maybe on the Know-It-Alls podcast itself, that for someone that young, that's actually a much better strategy than it probably is for other people. Like, I really feel like, apart from Sandra Diaz-Twine, no one needs goats more than young people.
Yeah. And she's playing like you normally see the young woman do on their second season.
Right, right.
Where they realize that they just sort of sat around waiting for their move and being too nervous to do anything the first time, so not all of them, but some of them come out really all guns blazing the next time. And Andrea Belkey, I think, is a good example of this, as somebody who really went about trying to organize as much as she could. And I think that's what Julia's doing. And a lot of the things she's saying, her reasoning behind it is entirely sound strategy. It's good survivor theory. I think her execution is a little too obvious. But, you know, I have to applaud her for getting out there and trying it.
Right. I mean, it does seem like maybe the reason that Aubrey and Sydney are so dead set on now turning on Julia is because she's really being really overt about wanting to play the middle now with the guys.
Mm. Yeah. I think that is definitely the case. And there's probably, I mean, it's always hard to see how, but there's probably a way she could do it more subtly, aside from not volunteering at the reward.
Yeah, although I do want to say again, just to go back to it, I do think it's very sharp on her part to recognize that probably because of her age, she needs to sit there with people that others are not going to be inclined to vote for. I think that's a really heads-up play.
Yeah.
Because I really do feel like we've just seen, juries, I think, are going to just have such a harder time voting for someone that they view not as a peer.
Yeah, because even though she's been saying she's 22, that's still the youngest person on the cast.
Oh, is she saying 20? I thought she was saying 20. Either way, it doesn't make a difference. A huge difference.
I'm pretty sure she had her birthday, I think, around when Caleb got evacuated, and actually her 19th birthday, but she told them she was turning 22.
Oh, okay.
That's what I heard. But that's still, you know, she's still in full-time education, whereas almost everybody else is in a job, so.
Actually, one thing I hadn't thought of, and I wonder what production would do in this situation, and I would really be curious to see how this goes, is they don't let people under 21 drink alcohol on rewards. And if she wins a reward with alcohol on it, they could potentially have production say to her, oh, and we can't let Julia drink. And everyone's going to say, why is that?
Well, that would have happened at the merge feast.
Oh, that's a good point. There's always wine and stuff there. So I guess that if that would have been an issue, it's been resolved. And I'm guessing production probably threw her a bone and just said, don't drink.
Yeah, I'm sure production if you say that, you know, you're not going to out yourself for that, then the production aren't allowed to do it. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, and she probably said, listen, I'll lay off the booze. You just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they got the message to her that she was not allowed to drink.
Right. Yeah. Well, that at least could have been potentially interesting. That would have been, like, on Big Brother, if there was someone the producers didn't like, that would be an angle they would take to, like, subtly blow up their spot and say that, oh, this is just the rules of the game, this is something we had to do, but they would absolutely do that to blow up someone's game that they didn't like.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not missing anything now watching that show for the most part. Right. Yeah. Let's move over, or I guess actually before we move over, what do you think about just Julia long term now?
I don't think she can get to the end the way she's playing because there's too much attention on her. But I do think there's a lot of people she could beat if she did get to the end.
Who do you think she could beat? I think definitely Scott and Jason are fair to say at this point.
Well, I think all the guys are in trouble. I mean, I know we all love Ty, but I don't think he's garnering a lot of respect in the game. And Joe obviously is, I mean, he's in the majority, so he's got that going for him. You know, he's got something to point to game-wise. But yeah, I think Julia could beat any of the guys, and she probably beats Michelle too, unless Michelle starts getting more active in her own right. So yeah, as long as she can avoid going to the end with Aubrey and Sydney, she'd have this. But
that's actually a good point. And actually, one thing that I've been just kind of doing the math on is it seems like we're getting set up on Ty in particular to be like, for my money, I'm penciling Ty in for the finale coming up in either like fourth or third or whatever is just short of the finals. And he's the big character, lovable guy of the season that we're meant to think, and I did prior to you just saying that now, think would obviously win if he had made it there. I think you're actually, I don't know if Ty is really playing a game that would get him a lot of votes from this particular jury. It seems like Neil and Nick are probably going to be people who pride themselves on like voting for the air quotes, like better player, which may or may not be Ty, depending on how that idol goes. And it seems like in a lot of timelines, there would be younger girls quite often on the jury. So I don't know. I think you may be onto something that maybe Ty isn't necessarily a lock if he even makes it there.
Yeah, I mean, he beat Jason and Scott, who obviously are his ride or die at the moment. But right. I'm not sure who else he does beat. I mean, does he beat Joe?
I think he beats Joe. I think, like, if he's in a scenario, it depends. It always depends on, like, how he finds himself there. Yeah. I think he's an easy person to get to feel good about casting a vote for if you really don't like the people or person that he's sitting next to. I think people would have no issue voting for Ty. But if you are really trying to take, like, who really played the game into consideration, I could see it being the case that Ty is not the person you arrive at.
Yeah, and I don't say that Ty isn't playing the game because he's certainly trying to, but he seems very stressed out about playing the game. It's like he was all worried this episode about, oh, I don't want to play the way Jason and Scott are playing, and then he says, oh no, I've got to stop going with my heart, I've got to play this game because this is Survivor, it's not real life. And so yeah, you can, it's okay not listening to your heart, but you do have to listen to your head as well, Ty, because that's not the way to play it.
Totally.
So he's kind of getting led along by different people, and I don't think he's been able at any point to stop and think for himself, well, what is the way I should be playing the game? He's not thinking outside of what is being presented to him.
Well, I mean, I think that's just completely how Ty is. I think he has, like, a strong kind of personal code about the way he lives life, and I think it's awesome and, like, totally admirable. And we did get to see several instances this episode of him, like, really distancing himself, even as he's pouring the fire out, saying, like, this is not at all who I am. I really don't do this kind of thing. I'm not on board with Scott and Jason, which to me is, like, he's obviously, like, blatantly getting the big hero, big kind of character of the season. Certainly going to see him back again at it, but probably not the winner, at least, for me.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely coming back. He's almost as much of a lock as Caleb is, but I don't see him winning, and I'd struggle to see him winning any season, to be honest, because I don't know if everyone's seeing him this time as a big jury threat, but you know if he goes back, people are going to see him as a big jury threat.
Right, right. He may be doing himself, while it's making him a lock returnee, it's almost blowing up his second chance being viewed as so universally lovable.
Yeah, although at the same time, you could also see Ty as a good pawn. And if him and Caleb ended up back on the same season, which doesn't seem entirely unreasonable, and they were put in the same tribe, also doesn't seem entirely unreasonable. Mm-hmm. I would absolutely want to lock those two in as my allies, because I'd feel they were two people who could be controlled, who could be led.
Yeah, I think that's totally a great point. I wonder if they would put Ty and Caleb on the same tribe just because it probably would put a target on them, right? Especially if it's a three-tribe situation, potentially.
Oh, yeah, if it's a three-tribe, maybe not. But I think in a two-tribe situation, you'd really want them to be together so you could have that, you know, the romance reunited storyline.
Right, the, like, buddy comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ty, as I said, really got to explain himself, even though he was kind of in on the sabotage here. I have this dream scenario, and I know you've thought the same thing, where Scott soon gets voted out and turns to Ty for the super idol, and in the big moment of the season, Ty shuts him down. What do you think about that potentially coming in? Because I think that would be amazing.
I mean, I've been waiting for that ever since the super idol got announced, and Scott knew the two people with the idols, but didn't have one himself. I've been waiting for Scott to get voted out, and I thought it was going to be Jason shutting him down, but now it's obviously Ty's got the power. I think, well, maybe Ty will shut him down. So, yeah, I've been putting all my points in the pool I do on Scott for the past for 3 weeks straight now, I think, and it's still not happening. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, if we end up seeing that come in, we certainly have been set up enough for it. I think that's, while it's certainly not like a lock or anything, like it's certainly going to take some specific circumstances to happen and Ty making that decision, it really wouldn't surprise me at all. And I almost wish that had been the live Know-It-Alls episode, because that would have gotten the biggest reaction in Know-It-Alls history.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, maybe it will finally happen next week. Maybe. I think it has got to happen soon. I don't see Scott going a lot deeper. Jason, as you said, I could see Jason being a losing finalist, but not Scott, I think. And I think one of them's got to go. I feel it. I feel it's going to be Scott. He's been sort of getting set up as like the brains of the operation. I think we saw Aubrey saying that this time, didn't we?
We did, yeah. I think you're definitely onto something. I entered this episode thinking that we were probably going to be losing either Scott, Aubrey, or Debbie, one of those bigger characters, it felt like. And we did, in fact, end up losing Debbie, but I still feel like, yeah, Scott, now may be the time. Although, going back to Julia, it also seems like maybe we could be getting set up for Julia leaving next week, now that she's really coming out and becoming a big character and really making herself a big game presence, too.
Yeah, I think Scott and Julia are the two I've sort of got pegged as. They really can't get much further. I don't see them getting within sniffing distance of the end.
Yeah, I'm with that. Do you think that it's smart, like, as all of this sabotage is going on, is there any idea for Ty to just say, publicly say, I'm disavowing this, I'm not on board, I want to now come on with you and the girls and bring my idol along with me? Or is he potentially worried about doing that and then Scott blowing up his idol spot and his whole game, potentially?
Well, I think what we've seen from Ty pretty consistently throughout the season is that he seems to get on better with the men.
That's true.
He's been gravitating towards them. So I think you're right. It would absolutely be a great thing for him to do, but I don't think he's going to do it. We'll see. In the preview, had Aubrey talking to him, so maybe she can win him over. But
yeah. One of Alex Kidwell, who was one of the people I stayed with at the hashtag podcast house, which was a fantastic time and so much fun. But he was... He was the one at the live Know-It-Alls who would take the index cards with the audience questions on them and hand them to Rob. And he said one of the best ones that didn't get read was about if the people made a mistake talking about Ty in front of Mark the Chicken. And Mike Bloom also floated the theory as we were watching the episode that the chicken was a horcrux for Ty.
Oh, yeah, I remember the horcrux thing. So the episode that Mark gets killed is the one that Ty goes home on.
Right, right.
I mean, my hope is that Mark is the last beauty left standing, which I know you disagree with because you're on the Michelle train, but that would be what I'd want to see.
I think that would be great. Do you think Mark is making it out of the season alive?
No. It would be hysterical. Because he was the one that almost drowned in the premiere, I think, that's been on Reddit this
week. Oh, was it that specific chicken?
I think it was. I think the one they killed was more black, and Mark's sort of black and white. But yeah, I am loving Mark the Chicken. I'm loving that they've actually got a chicken that's a proper pet, and they're able to use it in the show as a kind of a character in itself.
Yeah.
And he's attacking Sydney this episode.
So the only seasons you haven't seen now are Palau and Guatemala, right? So you'll understand a Balboa the Snake reference?
I understand Balboa the Snake and Pelican Pete, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Is Mark the Chicken the best animal mascot of all time?
Yes, he has achieved that now.
I love every single time. Ty just walking around with the chicken on his shoulder is incredible.
Yeah. And I also love the fact that way back in the first episode, Nick made that comment about the chickens are going to be dead soon, and now Mark's outlasted him, which I think is funny.
That's really, really good. Yeah.
That chicken's the best social game ever played on Survivor.
The chicken's killing it. The chicken's definitely the leader of the alliance here.
Yeah.
Mark the Chicken's calling the shots, yeah. So let's go from here into someone who has been, probably along with Aubrey, I would say like the stars of these last couple of episodes. Let's get into Sydney, who, after the reward incident with Julia, who's been off with the guys, she now launches this attack against Julia, and she was the big move maker, as I mentioned, last week as well. I'm wondering, though, if this is maybe too early for Sydney to be making herself such a big presence within the game, although I know she's someone still on a lot of people's winner radar. What have you been thinking about Sydney, particularly recently, now that we've actually really seen her come out of her shell?
Oh, I love Sydney. And I mean, I'm not saying, again, that I necessarily agree with all the game moves she's making, but like Julia, she's also pretty young. She's only 23, I think it is, so she's the second youngest woman in the game.
Interesting.
And she's... Yeah, she's just really putting herself out there. I do think probably when you're young, you kind of have to do that because otherwise players will just dismiss you. So maybe that's the one argument for going so strong so early. But I mean, she's just great in every way because she's good in she's putting herself out there in the game, and she's great at confessionals. She has her own way of saying everything, so she's fun.
Yeah, I really, really am a big fan of having Sydney on this season. She's definitely been a big enough character that if I wasn't so sold on Michelle, I would definitely be into the idea of Sydney potentially winning. Although, again, I really feel like entering this merge, she had a really good spot, and I know she's been like dictating a lot of the stuff that's been going on. I still just question if maybe it isn't peaking a little bit too soon. Put it, you know, not properly mitigating her threat level within the game. Maybe getting on people's radars too soon.
Yeah, I was actually, there's a secret scene on Entertainment Weekly this week where she was talking about the reasons why she flipped and about how Jason always used to say to her that it was going to be those two to the bitter end. She was never quite sure about it because she didn't know how tight he was with Scott, so she was always taking it with a grain of salt. And then with the merge, she saw him getting so tight with Nick, and it was all, there seemed to be like a very men-oriented alliance going on. Whereas, I mean, and Sydney, again, the person said pre-season she didn't want to work with the women. She found that she had more in common with the women, and she saw more options with the women's alliance. So I think had Scott and Jason reacted differently to Nick's blind side, we would probably see Sydney being able to work with them still going forward. But I think because they really just burnt their bridges there with her. So she is definitely in with the women now. And, I mean, I think she's not in a bad spot, but I think, again, she is making herself obvious. And Aubrey are the ones who are certainly controlling things at the moment. And Aubrey, we think, has Joe in her pocket. Maybe not. It really depends which one of them actually has the numbers when it comes time to do the power struggle there.
Yeah, I think Sydney is someone who, generally speaking, like if she finds herself in this season or any season in a final tribal council scenario, probably didn't get there because she got dragged. She probably got there because she made like active game moves that she's going to be able to argue. And more importantly, I would say, and this is something I would definitely give Sandra a ton of credit for, is I think Sydney really does come across as genuine, and I think jurors really would appreciate that.
Yeah. We do have to sort of wait and see, because I don't think anybody was particularly happy with the way Sydney was getting paranoid last week. Except for the brains, obviously. But yeah, I think she's... I'd be curious to see how she handled herself in a final tribal council situation, because I could see her doing a great job, but I could also see her really getting the wrong tone and completely throwing herself under the bus. So But I don't think she's making it to final tribal council.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I definitely don't think she would be like a lock if she was up against any random opponents, for sure. I definitely agree that she maybe could take the wrong approach.
Yeah, I think she could be her own worst enemy, but it would be a lot of fun watching it. She'll be an amazing juror as well.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't considered potentially. Well, she definitely has been like dictating the pace of the game. And I would say along with Aubrey, who, you know, after this Julia thing, they kind of powwow. Aubrey in particular gets some great confessionals about it. And this is where she talks about the sabotage potentially being like a design play for Scott and Jason to draw votes onto themselves with the intention of idling those votes away. And this is why the prospect of booting Julia this round is so potentially appealing, just because she is potentially a big threat who is in good with the other side and would never see it coming and potentially would flush out all of these idols. What did you think about this idea? Obviously, she goes on to win the immunity necklace. Were you a fan of this potentially coming in, though?
Okay, so there's basically two ways of looking at it. I mean, there's a way Debbie was looking at it, and I'm assuming that despite what Debbie was saying, she did realize that there was a good chance they had at least one idol and quite possibly two. So, I mean, Debbie's plan was just to vote 3-3-3, and the idols will be flushed, just risk the blowback, which is, I mean, since Debbie's a prime target for that blowback, that's quite bold of her. Whereas Aubrey was more about taking control of the vote. So hopefully, I mean, her plan was to flush the idols, but to control who gets voted out.
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, I don't know. I think there's arguments for both ways. Typically, in the past, it seems like players have taken, let's just risk the idol blowback vote rather than break ourselves up.
I think it's particularly a good selling point if you are Debbie or someone in the position of like, look, I'm the one who's going to get these votes on me. So I'm the one taking the risk here, and I'm still fine with this plan.
Mm. But one thing I liked about doing it the way Aubrey and Sydney did it is that you're not ceding control of the vote to the men, which is going to be particularly, it always looks good in front of the jury.
Because
idol players get such a high rating in jurors. And if you can say that, yeah, they had the idol, but they still couldn't, we still dictated the vote that round. You know, you always want to sort of be able to claim some control.
Right. I don't think it's even debatable that the idea is, you want to be, regardless of which idols get played, ideally deciding who goes home here.
Yeah. So, and in that case, yeah, Julia's easily the most obvious choice. She's got that sort of bond with Scott and Ty from when she was saved at the Peter vote. She's apparently tight with Michelle. Michelle had a secret scene calling her number one ally, in fact, this week. And so, yeah, Julia has got a lot of flexibility going forward, and she's obviously aware of that because she did the reward challenge with the men.
Right. That's why so, I feel she seemed to vocalize that knowledge that she's like, yeah, I'm killing it. I'm playing the middle perfectly right now. And that's why I feel like she might be gone next week.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think she was absolutely the right choice. And of course, the question then is, once she does win immunity, was it the right choice to still try and go ahead with the plan of voting out one of their own and keep control of the vote? But
yeah,
I'm skipping ahead too far.
But. Well, no, don't. It kind of ties in because Aubrey bookends that immunity challenge. She gets a confessional leading into it saying, I believe firmly that Julia needs to go home. And then we have that immunity challenge, which Julia wins.
Yep.
And then afterwards, we go back to Aubrey, who said, the plan just went out the window. What do I do now? And it seemed like for a long time that was Michelle getting that kind of stuff. And Aubrey has been visible, but it really seems like she's been kicking it into, like, you know, shifting it into, I guess, to the next gear these last couple of weeks. And as a person who, since like episode 4 or 5, I've been locked in on Michelle is obviously winning. It's just a matter of how. Aubrey is starting to get me a little bit nervous here because we really are seeing a lot of her, and this was a down week for Michelle.
I would also argue Michelle's never really had that sort of confessional, that hardcore strategy. This was the plan, and oh, now this isn't the plan.
Yeah.
She's really been getting more, I think you were saying this at the Nodals event, these generic, let's just give Michelle something to say confessionals.
Well, this goes back to kind of like why I would still be very solidly on the Michelle is going to win, but not as confident as I was, you know, this time a few days ago, is it does still seem like we are getting, we did get some Michelle early in this episode for no real reason that I could tell.
Could be said for Joe.
No, that's totally true.
Michelle, this episode really got the Joe edit where let's get Michelle to say something early on and then forget about her for the rest of the episode.
Right, show her just kind of getting filled in on the plan later on.
Yeah, because, everybody got a confessional this episode. Everybody got a confessional last episode. The only person who didn't get a confessional in the Merge episode was Julia. I've been keeping track of the confessionals this season.
Oh, interesting. Who's the season-long leader in confessionals right now?
I think it's still Ty.
That sounds right. That does sound right.
Yeah, but he's been, like, really quiet. Yeah, he's got 32 total. Aubrey's got 30. Scott's got 30.
Really, this is going back, like, really balanced stuff. I remember one of my favorite Survivor statistics. I've now forgotten the exact numbers, but I want to say the Russell to Natalie White confessional disparity was something like 108 to 14.
Oh, my gosh, really?
I think it was something that, and, like, five of Natalie's came in the finale.
That is terrible. That's really, really bad.
It's astounding if you look it up on, like, Survivor Sucks or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, just to give full credit, I've been following Reddit for the confessional counts this season, and it's a user called M4 Milo who's been keeping track of those, so thanks to him or her.
All right, excellent. Yeah. Reddit, by the way, we don't say this often enough, so much, like, whenever there's a puzzle, a great resource for, like, figuring out the intricacies of the stuff that they would never really get into on the show, or tracking confessionals and things along those lines.
Yeah.
A really, really, really useful resource.
Yeah, I don't post on Reddit, but I do visit it all the time.
Likewise, yeah.
Really fun.
Yeah. Well, going just quickly back to this edit thing, where have you been standing on the kind of discussion that Dom and I seem to have every single week that Michelle is blatantly going to win and it's just a matter of how. Have you been kind of as confident as we have?
I've never counted myself as a particularly good edit reader, so I don't want to say, no, she's not going to win. But I have been sort of fighting this sense of its inevitability, perhaps because I don't want it to be an inevitability. I want there to be... And I have been... I mean, I figured that it was going to be either Aubrey or Michelle. And I did have Debbie as a dark horse contender, just getting a really weird, you know, Debbie edit.
Tony Blanco style, potentially.
Yes, basically. You can't edit Debbie in any sort of normal winner fashion.
Right.
So, yeah, I have been... I mean, my winner pick is certainly Aubrey at the moment, and I think it is between them. I suppose I could see Sydney still in there, but I think Sydney... I think it's like, you know, Scott and Julia are in the mix to go next, and then Sydney and probably Ty are in the next sort of tier of people to go, I think. I don't think I've got Ty going as long as you have.
Okay. I feel like Ty, the audience, I feel like they're setting him up to be a finale person, like just the big standout lovable character of the season.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like Aubrey and Michelle are both making it to the finale. Although Aubrey got a really big spike in confessionals this week. So.
Right, and that, for that reason, I do not feel like Aubrey is making it to... I think if she is in the finale, she is the winner. But I think Aubrey is actually potentially, like, again, the next one gone. Because just going back to, like, why I'm more confident in Michelle's winner edit than Aubrey's winner edit is, yeah, Aubrey these last couple of weeks has been getting much, like, better and more related content. But Michelle's been getting the stuff that really doesn't even need to be in there. And to me, that means more reason to believe in Michelle, because it easily could have been left out. But for some reason, they felt compelled to put it in. Whereas Aubrey's stuff is just, she's a really solid narrator who is probably giving them the best stuff to tell the story.
Yeah, I think there's certainly an argument that right now they are telling Aubrey's story because she's about to go home.
Exactly.
Kind of the way they've edited a lot of the players this season. They've given them the few episodes of their story and then boom, they're gone. But at the same time, Aubrey has been getting this a lot of people have made this thing about a premiere scene between her and Joe where they're soaring through a piece of boom boom and Joe says to Aubrey, oh, it gets exciting when you get close to the end. And it's like, oh, so are those two in at the end then? Which
that
I
is
really
something
like.
I brought up in our premiere podcast and had completely forgotten about.
I keep seeing it getting mentioned around the web, so that's why I'm remembering it. And I'm clinging to that because I would like to see both Aubrey and... Well, I don't really care about Joe, but if he's part of with Aubrey, then yeah. So I'd love to see them go to the end. And it also, Aubrey, you said last week she was getting a Spencer edit, which I really like. I mean, I don't fully agree with that because I like Aubrey and story a lot more than Spencer. It's a lot more genuine. It doesn't feel as patched together. But I think that's really interesting that in this era of, you know, Spencer being the fan favorite, production favorite, that they're maybe trying to make Aubrey into the female version of him. And could that be a winner's edit for Aubrey? Even though Spencer didn't win, could it be how they would do Aubrey's winner edit?
It very easily could be. And, like, going back to what you said, like, she has kind of, like, we saw with Nick or Liz or Peter before her, among, I guess, those at least come to mind, they've been set up as, like, really seeing a lot of them just before they go out, and that's why I'm feeling like maybe Aubrey could be the next one out. At the same time, I could easily see that being the case for Scott or Julia or Sydney here, and I think it was the case for Debbie, too. So I certainly by no means, now that I think about it, feel like Aubrey is definitely not in the finale. I could easily see her being the person, if it's her, Jason, and Michelle in the final three, and she is the obvious winner who just doesn't win the immunity challenge, and then Michelle kind of picks it up against Jason, against a jury who hates Jason.
Yeah, and that would be interesting because one of the things I often say is that Survivor, when there's a female winner, they tell the story of how a man lost. But I think there's a very good argument that at the moment that they'd be telling the story of how Aubrey lost.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Which would be an interesting sort of change around.
I would, going back to that Reddit comment and the bamboo thing, and wouldn't it be great if we're there at the end? I would love it if I, you know, this time next season am never willing to put any kind of certainty behind any of my picks because I've been so scarred by being so wrong about Michelle for so long, and Aubrey is our winner, because I'm certainly rooting for her out of the entire cast to go on to win it, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not even sure she's necessarily playing the best game, but she is the one I most relate to, and I love all her confessionals. They're fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
And I think the other big red flag for me with Michelle is that I know you keep saying, oh, they keep pushing in these confessionals that they don't have to do for her. But, I mean, A, they've been doing that with a lot of people because they really seem to be working hard not to have completely purple players this season. And B, I don't think the casual fans do remember her. I don't think there is anything about Michelle that's really standing out for people who are watching the show with you know, less than the level of commitment than we're doing.
Right, and I would say that's despite their best efforts, and that's why it stands out so much to me. It's like, they seem to be really going for the highlight reel every single time she's on to really sell us on her as someone. Like, I just can't get over the quote she had last episode where she talked about, I just really want to cement myself as someone who earned it.
What do you think, then, the fact she was completely eliminated from the previously recap?
That definitely did stand out. The previously on is typically like how Dom and I will start talking about each of these episodes is you see a lot of like how they want you to be viewing that current episode, like the previous episode's events for that current episode. And they'll give the credit to like completely different people than got it the week before if that's going to play better for this current week's story. And I think that's what you're talking about, right? It's like Michelle wasn't even mentioned as being a part of that. And if she's the eventual winner, kind of like Parvati famously in Micronesia got credit in a lot of previously ons for stuff that Sari did. They would probably be doing that with Michelle too. It definitely is a concern. And like, I would probably come down to all of this, you know, factoring in like how big of an edit Aubrey's been getting and that as well. I would put right now, I've gone from like 98% to probably 90% on Michelle. I still think there's very much a possibility that she is not the winner.
Yeah, I think what stood out, the reason it stood out for me was that obviously back in when they had that mansplaining scene between Nick and Michelle, she had all that, I don't need to be carried, bro, and how she was going to, you know, play along with him until she needed to turn against him. And it really seemed set up for Michelle to be the big orchestrator of Nick's blindside at that point. And then when Nick did get blindsided, yes, she was involved, but they really played down her involvement as much as they could, and they gave the credit to Sydney, totally, who deserved it. She was orchestrating it more than Michelle. Michelle just decided to go along with it. And I just found that interesting, because that seemed to be such a big part of Michelle's storyline, was that she was, you know, going to turn against Nick, and then that just became a complete anticlimax. I felt that hurt her chances. I also really didn't like that they gave her a confessional at the start of the episode, but they gave her nothing in this vote. And she was, you know, when Julia and to an extent Michelle are the swing votes here, and Michelle is tight with Julia, who is A, almost on the chopping block herself, and then B, integral to getting the vote to go the way they want it to go. Why isn't Michelle getting, you know, she must have said something that they could have used just to throw in here, oh, I really need to talk Julia to going with Aubrey and Sydney. You know, that there must, I just can't believe they couldn't have found something just to give Michelle some agency in the strategy that went on.
Yeah, it is really surprising. Although my response to that would be like, if she really wasn't the one, like if this was, as it appeared to be, like Aubrey and Sydney really driving this action, I love it that they're not shoehorning in Michelle being a, you know, just an equal part of that, because that would just, you know, if they were doing that, I wouldn't be sitting here saying 90%. I'd be sitting here saying 98 still. And yeah. Potentially something else that you brought up is the idea that they're not really making anyone purple. Maybe that's what they're doing with Michelle. They're shoehorning in all of these awesome scenes because they want to give her some screen time while she's still there. I don't know. I still think it's, as I've said, overwhelmingly likely. But as it pertains to like her being invisible, I would say, you know, this episode even being in the middle of like this big coup, I'm actually really a fan of that, especially if it's like true to how things actually went down. I would love it if they would do that more often rather than trying to force us to think that the winner was like responsible for everything great that ever happened.
Although, at the same time, you could also argue that that's what they did with Aubrey a bit this episode, because she got pretty much all the narration of... I really paid attention when I did my rewatch and how who exactly was saying what in this bit where they were deciding the vote, because Aubrey got all the sort of strategy narration confessionals. But if you look at it, she and Sydney talk about the vote and they decide they're going to go against Debbie. And Sydney says, I can get Michelle. And Aubrey says, I can get Joe. And what happens is Aubrey cannot get Joe. So right. They reconvene and Sydney says, well, I think I can get Julia. And then Sydney goes, she and Michelle get Julia. So Sydney pulls together the four votes they need. Aubrey doesn't. Aubrey fails in the vote that she was going to get.
And that's a really good point.
And yet Sydney gets very little sort of confessionals about this. Aubrey gets 10 confessionals this episode, which is the second highest individual count for a player for an individual episode.
Was Nick at the merge the highest?
Yeah, he had 11, and now Aubrey's got 10. She's also got the third highest because she had 8 at the merge.
All right, well, you're talking me down to 85% now.
Good. I'm sure.
By the end of this podcast, I'm going to be in like mid-40s.
I don't think I have much more evidence, so, but I'm glad I'm getting somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I would certainly, like, the number one thing I would want from this season is for it to be anyone other than Michelle at this point. I would love nothing more than to be completely blindsided by how this goes. Like, I think a big piece of why I love Kageyan so much and would consider possibly having it as, like, my number one season ever is even entering that finale, I was not thinking Tony was going to win.
Yeah. You thought it was going to be Wu. I know I thought it was going to be Spencer. And I thought Tony could win, but yeah.
I really didn't. I really didn't.
Oh, no. I think I was one of the few who did think he could get a vote, get the votes against people. But I was still, you know, even down when they were about to read the votes, I was thinking, could Wu have done this? Could he actually have pulled it off?
Well, I guess let's get into how... actually, one thing, just quickly going back to the immunity challenge, one of the things that I really loved about the live know-it-alls setting, and you can attest to this, was every time someone got some blocks going and then hit the thing and it knocked them over, the whole room was like, oh! And it was like, it was really like watching like a live major sporting event. It was such a cool atmosphere.
Yeah, it was such a good challenge for that event.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd get the entire room going, oh!
I really think this was just a really fun challenge design in general. I know we've seen plenty of things like this before, but I love that they keep bringing this back out. Especially, I love these challenges where you can be almost done, but it can all just come crashing down right at the end, and it's never really over until it's over.
Yeah, I mean, this particular challenge, they've had sort of variants on it before, but I think this is the first time they've done it quite like this, and it was so effective. It was, I mean, you know, I like when they have sort of diversity in challenges. I get very bored when they have the same style of challenge over and over. And this was something very different. So it was really cool to watch.
Right. I think the one it brought back to my memory was, I don't know if it was the final one or the penultimate one in Blood versus Water that Tyson won, where they were stacking things. And I think they just had to like hold onto ropes while they were doing it, which is harder in the sense that they have to balance their platform. But I really love that they were making them like high step and wear their legs out and make physical mistakes.
Yeah, that must have been the penultimate one, because the final one was that big sort of obstacle course type thing.
That's a lot of the final ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now that Julia ends up winning this immunity necklace, and by the way, I do think Julia probably ends up going here based on just how confident Aubrey seemed she wanted that to be her plan. And
if Aubrey was able to get Debbie out,
right.
I think she could easily have got Julia.
Exactly. Now Julia is immune, very critical immunity challenge and Debbie now here wants to split the votes again because she thinks there's no chance that they have an idol. What do you think about how all this goes down, and particularly from Sydney and Aubrey's perspective here?
You mean as like if it was a good idea? Or...
As they start turning on Debbie instead of now that Julia is immune.
It really not what I expected, because I thought the brains were going to be locked in, if anything. I mean, you know, one argument is, why not get Michelle out then? Because she also seems to be on the bottom.
Well, Sydney had a quote where she seemed to be viewing Debbie as a threat to at least a certain extent, where she said, Debbie will take us all down before Jason and Scott will. We can get them later. And it seems like, clearly for whatever reason, and I don't think we really saw too much of this on air, it seemed like they were very sketched out by Debbie.
Yeah, and that's sort of they've been building that storyline up at the merge. I mean, it seems that the merge, Debbie was basically getting all the blame for Nick and Michelle going with Braun.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument for that, you know, and also Debbie had proven herself time and again to be somebody that Aubrey couldn't control. And she was the oldest woman. She was the oldest person in that alliance, apart from Joe. And I think we've established that Joe is not going to be, pushing for any particular moves. Obviously, he's not necessarily going to vote the way you want him to. He proved that this episode. But he is not going to take the leadership reins. And Debbie really was. And as much of a joke as she was, I don't think she was a goat. I think she could have beaten many of them at the end. And that would be interesting to see a Debbie and Aubrey final three, because Aubrey had a really good social game, but she wasn't able to, you know, talk Debbie into anything. Debbie knew what she wanted to do, and that's what she was going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, I guess, what do you think Debbie really did wrong here? I don't know, other than just general being sketched out by her. Like she says, like Debbie says herself, I play offense, and it really seems like that's what it came down to, as far as if we're not going to be putting our votes on the guys, and why not Michelle? It seems like Debbie, even though Michelle is probably going to be viewed as more generally likable and a better physical competitor, and probably not even as loyal of an ally potentially with Aubrey and Sydney, it really seems like they weren't even considering voting her out.
Yeah, and maybe because, I mean, Michelle's just played such a quiet game. She's just, they're not worrying about her.
Yeah.
So that it might be as simple as that. And as obviously Sydney and Michelle had time to bond on the beauty, on Chandler Beach. So they maybe, I mean, Michelle says that Julia's her number one ally, but maybe that's not how they see it. They think that she's very comfortable with them.
Yeah. So, I mean, just staying on like just how generally quiet Michelle's been, and it seems to be the way she's being perceived within the game as well. I really feel like the more I see them, as we've talked about, just kind of force Michelle upon us and really try to sell us on Michelle, as far as I can tell, that this is probably going to, if she does end up winning, be almost like a Jenna Maraska style, like back into it kind of situation, where she maybe wins some crucial immunities or is just there against the right person, wins and takes her because maybe Aubrey was the only other option or something like that.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, she could win the final immunity and just look, we've dragged Jason this far. There is no way I'm taking Aubrey to the end over him. You know,
I do want to be clear that I think Michelle is much, much, much more likable and a much better player than 21-year-old Jenna Maraska.
Oh yeah, I mean Michelle, she's smart. She knows her game theory, and And it could be argued she's playing the best game of the women because she's not making herself a target. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just obviously she's got the least flashy game. And because of that, certainly as things stand, she's got the least winner equity of the women. But again, I don't think any man can beat any women at this, any of the women at this point.
I'm trying to run through it, and I think that's probably actually really correct.
which is very weird, and it's not what I would have expected. But yeah, I think Jason and Scott were the ones with the most winner equity, and they completely trashed it this episode.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, let's get into this, Jason and Scott again. As we talk about this tribal council, we get some like obligatory general discussion about the game dynamics. And then they get into, I think we can go ahead and tell everyone what's going to happen. Ty's got an idol. He's not going anywhere. And Ty says, yeah, I do. And Jason says, wait a minute, the idol's got a brother. And they make this big grand display at this tribal council, busting out the idols, high-fiving each other. I am always an advocate in these kind of desperate situations. It's straight out of the 48 laws of power. Create compelling spectacles. I know it's basically always a bluff, as Rob talked about at the Tribal Council, but I think the idea here in their spot, when you know you're on the bottom, but you just need to do whatever you can to stir up enough uncertainty and confusion, is to do exactly that. Just make a grand display, talk about playing rock, paper, scissors to see what's going to happen, things along those lines. Like, just cause as much uncertainty as possible with the majority.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. And there's another reason there. It's just simply performance in front of the jury.
Yeah, totally, totally. Great point.
Yeah. And I think, Stephen's been saying this on Twitter. He's been trying to find out, you know, what does everybody know about the super idols? Because there's obviously the performance they're putting on, and we don't know how much the rest of the players in the game know about what those idols can do. And I think Debbie said Debbie's no use because you can't trust anything she says. And Neil has said that he told Aubrey about the super idols.
Oh.
And now, again, is he remembering correctly? Because that surprised me. I thought there was no way Aubrey could have known about the super idol because she was talking about flushing the idols. So yeah. I think either he's remembering incorrectly or Aubrey just assumed that there was no way that anybody was going to give away their idol to use as a super idol.
Yeah, that really complicates things. Now, yes. I didn't realize Aubrey could have had any idea.
Yeah, because I just don't see how her plan makes any sense.
Right.
If she knows that the super idol can be played after the vote.
Well, maybe that even more compelled her to not want to even have to put any votes on the guys and hope that they try to avoid the split and play them on two separately rather than whoever gets the revote. Because I think even with the Tyler Perry idol, you have to play it after the first votes are cast. So with the super idol, they could still only play it after the first votes were cast if it was a tie, and then the other one could still go out on a revote. So why not keep two separately, idol both of yourselves, and then you're both safe?
Yeah, if there's a split vote, you'd have to do it that way.
Right, right.
So, which, of course, Julia had told them how the vote was going to be split. Mm-hmm. So they could easily have chosen to do it that way. But the what did they say they were going? It was going to be between, I can't remember who they were going to split the votes between.
And Scott and Ty.
Scott and Ty. Okay. So yeah, they could have just done it very straightforward that way. I really liked how they did it because they were doing this huge entertainment spectacle, and they knew all along they were just going to give it to Ty anyway. The question it raises for me is, does this mean that, according to the rules, you have to have the super idol combined before the votes are read?
That was my big question as well, because, and Stephen hammered on this multiple times at the Live Know-It-Alls, which is, if you can play them, if you can keep them separate until after the votes are read, and then once you see the result, decide whether or not to combine them, there is absolutely no reason not to wait. You would never give it to Ty ahead of time.
Mm. And they did say at the start of the episode, oh, we should have used it to save Nick, which seems to refute that. Although it's possible they checked with production about what the exact rules were and got told that, no, they have to have it before the votes are read. It seems a weird way to do it for me, because I would have thought one of the appeals I thought of the Super Idol was that somebody could be voted out and they could then turn and make a plea to their friend, please save me. And, you know, you have that moment, do you do it or not? And I feel like, you know, the survivor has lost out on that potential scenario by saying you have to have it for the vote.
Right. We know that the super idol is definitely transferable if it's already a super idol after the vote, but we don't know if they're allowed to make a super idol after the vote. And that's the confusion. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get a clear ruling on that anytime soon, yeah, if ever.
Yeah. And again, maybe that's also something that Aubrey's confused about.
I will say, if Scott didn't look into the rules and then they gave that idol to Ty and he ultimately doesn't give it back, they deserve 100% to have Scott voted out in that scenario.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, Aubrey's entire plan seemed to be based on the fact that they would play those two idols before the votes were read. So that's... Right. I don't see how she could be going ahead with that and think that the most likely scenario was that they were going to play an idol after the votes were read.
Yeah, so. It's really curious. And potentially, once Aubrey's able to talk, I definitely would love to hear about that.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more probably conflicting stories as other people get voted off.
Oh, I'm sure this is another tribal council where, like, this tribal council probably lasted a long time and there was a ton that we didn't get to see that made a huge impact on how things went.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is great because, like, we literally see just a bunch of, like, side conversations start happening, people whispering and potentially licking each other's ears. And this is, like, to me, this is what, like, Survivor is all about. I know Josh Canfield, who, incidentally, I met Josh Canfield, talked to him for maybe 90 seconds just at the after party. Nicest yeah. guy. He was so nice.
Really?
Really great to talk to. But he made a great point on Know It Alls, where he talked about, like, when they would do this earlier on, Jeff would, like, shut it down, like, and call them out and say, hey, what are you guys talking about? I love that they're allowing them to do this now. Like, yeah. It should be on the players to say, hey, what are you guys whispering about behind my back?
Also, well, everybody's doing it, so right. Who are you going to call out?
That's a good point, too. Yeah. Yeah, well, this is great. The guy, by the way, so after the votes come in, the guys...
Oh, actually, wait, I wanted to...
Oh, sure.
One thing up about Michelle, because she did do something this episode which I thought was pretty awesome. And she said when they were after, you know, they'd done all that theatrical, oh, Ty's going to be playing an idol and Scott and I will be doing Rochambeau. And she said, well, you know, Ty says he's going to play his idol, but he could hand it over to Scott. So we really don't know who to vote for. It's a gamble. And I really like the fact that she brought that up. She showed that she was thinking. And just because somebody says, oh, I'm definitely going to play it, that doesn't mean you're voting between Jason and Scott. Maybe you should be putting your vote on the person who is saying he's definitely playing his idol. And that was just Michelle bluffing too, because she knew that wasn't the plan. But it was a nice little thing to do in front of the jury and just put out, hey, I'm paying attention too. So I want to give Michelle props for that.
Nice little clip for the editors to include for us to see from Michelle, who... I'm not so sure why they would include that if she didn't do something substantial.
Well,
that is a good point. And, like, I'm certainly not trying to say, because it may be coming across that way, like, I do think Michelle is, like, a fine player. I know I'm not typically high on Jenna Maraska, and I don't know who really is. I'm not trying to suggest that, like, Michelle potentially is going to be, like, automatically an undeserving winner or anything. It just feels like they're really trying to force her down our throats.
Oh, yeah. And I wanted to point out, basically for the same reason that, you know, I keep saying, well, she's not really doing anything. I don't know who she would beat at the end, apart from all the men. but yeah, I do want to point out that since I've been making that argument, I do want to acknowledge, you know, but look, she did this, which was great. So, yeah, that's why I just wanted to make sure we brought that up.
Definitely.
So we weren't completely playing down Michelle.
Right. It's certainly not like all of her content is forced or whatever. Like, I'm not saying it's off the table that she can do good stuff and earn good content.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so these votes come down 4-3-2, and shockingly, over half of the tribe here is blindsided as our hero, America and England's hero, Debbie, is gone. First of all, before we get into, like, parting thoughts on Debbie, was this the right move?
Oh, it's so interesting. I think it was a really good move for Sydney because it's really, if you look at her, the way the alliance is now, she's got Aubrey and Joe and she's got Julia and Michelle. So she is, I mean, A, she's got rid of Debbie, who was one of the stronger people and stronger personality. So she's got a lot more influence now. Mm-hmm. She probably feels that she can control Aubrey more than she can control Debbie.
Yeah, definitely a clear move for Sydney, I would say.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's a really good move for Sydney. She's effectively putting herself in the middle there. It seems a really strange one for Aubrey. And I did wonder, you know, is there some element of, well, let's make the Brains the smallest tribe now, so we are the least threat?
Yeah, I'm totally on board with, like, that philosophy in general.
Yeah.
I think it's more important, like, once you hit the merge as things, like, that's why I'm such a big general fan of, like, the theoretical ideas behind an intentional Matt saying, like,
yeah.
If you go in there, like, 5-5-2 or something, you're in a, that's just fine living way more often than not. Right as things are, like, getting established. And I think they're definitely, even later on into the game, is a lot to be said for, like, picking off people that are potentially going to be viewed as tight with you that you are not, in fact, that tight with. Or don't trust or whatever. Like, such as, it really seemed like Aubrey did not vibe, like, was not digging Debbie's vibe within the game.
Yeah, but I think, also, Aubrey is now the oldest woman left by quite a margin. She's 29, I think. That's next is Michelle at 24. So she's sort of got quite a bit of seniority there, also in the eyes of the other players, because although I think Sydney is perhaps like the most dynamic player of that group at the moment, Aubrey probably has more respect among the jury, because, you know, Neil's the best buddy. Nick seemed to love Aubrey in the time that he knew her. And Debbie likes Aubrey. She did say in a Ponderosa video she was not going to vote for her, but, I mean, as I said, Debbie can't trust what she says.
Right.
Changes from every 5 minutes. So these are all people who are going to be sort of looking at Aubrey as somebody who knows what she's doing and willing to give her credit for moves, and just generally sort of focusing her and how she's moving through the game in a way that they might not be so much with Sydney. I think they'll be more inclined to dismiss someone like Sydney.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think Aubrey would do herself a lot of favors by trying to really paint Sydney as a big target soon.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a much weirder move for Aubrey than it is for Sydney. I don't think it's necessarily a bad one. But it couldn't be a bad one.
I think it could definitely be a bad one, just because it seems like Debbie, even if you feel like she's being shifty or whatever, it still seems like Debbie fully trusts you. And who is it that? Is it the end of the world if Sydney goes instead?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just because, yes, Debbie would never have voted against Aubrey. She
right.
would have taken Aubrey and Joe to the end. But is that really that beneficial if Debbie is also the reason your game's going off the rails because she's driving allies away?
And I guess that's the big consideration. It's like, if you feel like Debbie is going to be, you know, way more harmed than good,
yeah.
Then that's definitely justifiable. And this is probably something that it's probably unfair of us to be judging, like, this is definitively a good or bad move for someone, because we're basing all of this on, you know, 40-minute episodes of
yeah.
what we're being crap, you know, very heavily edited and shown, and like framing our whole perspective on it. I feel like there's probably a lot more that went into this decision.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what you said there about Debbie doing more harm than good. I think that's probably what it came down to for Aubrey. She just weighed it up and said, yes, she is doing more harm than good. And she'd already established she was not comfortable with voting for one of those three men. So she had to turn on their own, and she decided that Debbie was the most expendable after Julia. So,
yeah
we'll see where she goes from there, and hopefully it doesn't mean she's getting voted out next episode, because at that point it will be okay, so Michelle's winning.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as soon as Aubrey goes, I think it's probably safe to say.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that both Aubrey and Michelle are in there at the finale. Maybe one of them is going to end up being the fourth person, no, the fourth place the person who just misses the finals. I don't know.
I would definitely love it. Like, my dream finale, based on a combination of what I think is overwhelmingly likely to happen and what I want to happen, would be, I feel like it's going to be Michelle beating Jason in a final two. And I think it's hopefully going to be Aubrey just losing the final immunity challenge. Like, I would love for her to win it, I'm saying. But I think she's going to lose, and it's going to be devastating, and those two are going to be the final two. Michelle's going to pick up the win. And I think Ty's going to be in there in that, like, fourth or fifth place spot.
Yeah, and Joe as well. So our final five would be Joe, Aubrey, Jason, Ty, and Michelle.
Right.
Which I could see.
I think that would be a really good... You could see that being the cover of the DVD in 5 years.
No, Joe wouldn't be on there. Debbie would be on instead of Joe.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, so actually, let's staying on the right idea or the wrong idea, what did you think of the way, I know we liked the guys kind of just causing chaos and confusion and so forth. I obviously strongly disagree with them giving the tie the idol at that point if they didn't have to, but what did you make of them giving him the idol to begin with? As you pointed out, it seemed like they, despite the whole Rochambeau facade, they were obviously going to do that the whole time. Is that the right idea? Because as we've flagged up, Ty could easily just screw them over with that now, and now they could just be out an idol.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's why you do it with Ty, because Ty's the least likely to screw you over.
That's a good point.
You could argue that you forced Ty to give it to you, but I think they're probably fairly confident they've got Ty where they want him. So they think they can do this little exercise of giving it to him, and that way it's showing their trust in him.
Yeah, which... I think that was the idea, and it's probably a somewhat well-founded idea when he seemingly, during all of the drama of the sabotage, wasn't leaving your side, and he was even pouring water on the fire himself. It seems like he is committed to you guys.
Yeah. And, I mean, honestly, I just think the move now is as soon as they get back to camp, say, okay, Ty, I can have my half of the idol back. Assuming he's allowed to give it back.
I'm sure he's... Oh, he can... Why wouldn't he be allowed to do whatever
I don't know. I mean, again, we don't know the rules of the super idol.
That's true.
They're together. Are they together and that's it? So I can't imagine that's true, but, you know, I assume that, yeah, if they can just ask for it as soon as they get back to camp, and I think in that case he will. I think if they leave it with him, if they don't immediately ask for it back, then I could see Ty maybe going, oh, do I have to think about my game here and do the dirty move? But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, that'll be a really big story for me, is seeing when they do get back to camp. Because I could easily see Ty keeping it. And now that he knows that it's a super idol, and he's been shown having all of this conflict internally about Scott and Jason's behavior, and do I really want to be rewarding these guys? I'm guessing probably if they ask for it back, someone like Ty is not going to deny that to them. But I can honestly see them being, what I would say is, downright foolish enough to think that he's going to play that on us if it comes down to it, so let's let him think that he's the one with the power.
I don't know. I don't think... I feel like they'd have to be really, really ridiculously overconfident for that. If it was my idol or half of the idol, I would say, let me have that back.
Yeah, actually,
I would want to know it was in my pocket or wherever it is they keep it.
Especially when you've just publicly shown that Ty now has
yes.
double idols with this super idol rumor floating around there. If you can discreetly get your half back and everyone still thinks that Ty has the super idol.
Yeah.
That could be really fun. Yeah. Well, I guess let's get into parting thoughts on Debbie. One of my favorites from this season, for sure. Debbie and Aubrey have probably been and Ty, to a certain extent, have really been the standouts for me this season. Heartbroken to see Debbie go. I think we're on the same page. We're going to see Debbie back at some point, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, you get so few women who are that kind of a big character anyway. And even regardless of gender, she is such a big character. She has to be back. She is, you know, the successor to the coach and the Philip Shepherd role of that really eccentric person.
Yeah,
so, yeah, she's coming back.
She's fantastic, and I think we're hopefully going to see this same kind of authentic Debbie and not something that we've seen from, you know, some players who will remain unnamed who, after they see themselves on TV, start playing up to the cameras even more and giving what they think the audience wants to see. I really hope we can just see Debbie continuing to be exactly like she is, and I'm really optimistic that's the case.
Yeah, I think she didn't – I mean, if you – there's nothing really, I mean, what's her gimmick? That her career keeps changing. So I don't think she's got enough of a gimmick that she can play up to. It's just she is who she is, you know. And, of course, what I do love about Debbie is that she's this hardcore gamer as well, and the show did give her credit for that. They didn't just try to make her a complete buffoon. They gave her credit for some of those moves.
Yeah, I love certainly seeing Debbie. Very much hope to see her back. And I think if we do end up seeing her back, like I said, hopefully she stays totally organic. And I think she's probably going to approach the game entirely the same way, wanting to hit the ground running, and I'm going to love it all over again.
Yes, yeah. It's a really exciting thought. So.
Yeah. Where do we go from here now with Debbie gone, in your opinion? Like, how in trouble are the guys now that the situation is Ty publicly has these two idols together?
Okay, well, if it's a still down situation, how well do they understand the rules of the super idol? We're still not quite clear on that. Next episode might explain it a bit more. But I think the women are a lot weaker in numbers now because they've lost Debbie, who was a solid number, if nothing else.
Sure.
On the other hand, with Debbie gone, Julia and Michelle are probably feeling a lot happier about moving forward with the women, because I think it was Julia who talked about Debbie, Joe, Aubrey and Sydney being the majority, that she viewed them as the top of the chain. She didn't include Michelle in that, so she saw herself and Michelle as being in the bottom. But now with Debbie gone, it's you know, there's Joe and Aubrey as a pair, and her and Michelle as a pair, and Sydney in the middle. And if she has reason to think that Sydney is with them, which makes the most sense for Sydney to do, to move forward with those two rather than Aubrey
yeah.
and Joe, then yeah, I think Julia is going to be a lot more comfortable. But
yeah, I would be really, really concerned, particularly if I was in like Aubrey or Sydney's spot, where the last couple of votes have gone my way. And I feel like I could actually put in a solid run here, but these guys have this idol / possible super
yes.
idol. You know, best case scenario is they have two different idols. I would really want to take care of that sooner rather than later, especially while there are still a lot of people here around that could potentially be the fallback person instead of me. I want to clear those up immediately if possible.
Yeah, and you've got it's the problem of flushing the idol.
Right, but what I mean, I guess, is it's time to start putting the votes on those people. We can't keep picking off our own people. Mm. We need to either force them to play them or leave the game with them in their pocket.
Well, obviously we see in the preview that Aubrey's trying to talk Ty over.
Right.
I'm really curious to see how she does with that, because Aubrey's actually been pretty good at getting people to like her, even if she can't necessarily get them to vote with her. And Ty is somebody who is quite easily led, or who seems to be easily led. So I'm curious to see how that pans out. But certainly, I think one of the things that's probably one of the best strategies is to try and make that easier on yourself by taking one idol out of that alliance, by taking Ty out of the alliance.
No, I totally agree. And maybe that's like why the guys felt compelled to give Ty the idol, is they're thinking, we're going for the super high upside play here, where we're going to sit on both of these idols and hopefully all three still be here. And if that goes through, Ty is probably going to be someone that the girls are going to want to bring over, and we want to almost guilt him into feeling like he has to stay with us.
Yeah. So I think that's really what it comes down to. The women need to break Ty away from those two guys, because they can do that. They can just do a straightforward split vote on Scott and Jason, and then
yeah.
they don't have to worry about the idol blowback. But maybe that's how Sydney goes out. Maybe they just say, okay, we've got to risk it, and the men put their votes on Sydney again.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I could definitely see, I mean, this is such a wishy-washy, not even worth saying on a podcast thing to say. I could see any of Sydney, Scott, or Julia having, like, a really compelling downfall next week.
Yeah. Actually, now that you mentioned it, I'm trying to think, how would Julia go out? Maybe she does try to keep...
Well, if she's viewed as trying to work back over with the guys again, like she probably would have been gone without the necklace last round. And obviously things have greatly changed. Like, just losing Debbie by itself changes the numbers drastically. And the girls may not feel like they can afford to do that anymore, the girls and Joe. But if she is potentially viewed as being too tight with the guys, and they do, for whatever reason, want to wait one more round on taking a shot at putting votes on the guys, I think Julia is kind of an automatic person to do that to.
Although also, the guys, you know, she told the guys she was going to vote with them, and she didn't. I mean, she didn't vote against them either, but she didn't go with their plan.
I think she could easily spin that as, hey, I was looking out for you guys. None of you went home.
Yeah, but that they weren't very happy last time, were they, with Sydney? They weren't very forgiving towards Sydney, so why do you think they're going to be forgiving towards Julia? And I also the fact they did that whole theatrical idol thing suggests to me that they weren't counting on Julia's vote anyway going into that. They had a good idea she wasn't with them. So I'm not sure that maybe there's going to be some bad blood there, the way those two have been playing against Julia. So maybe they do switch their target from Sydney to Julia.
Well, one thing I'm considering now as it pertains to the guys and those idols is if any of the three of them get that immunity necklace and then they can split up the idols again and walk into tribal council, three amigos styles, completely yes. theoretically protected, how do you put votes on them? I think you should. But I think it would be really hard to pull the trigger.
Yeah, because Sydney's got to be the one who would be sweating in that situation because she knows they voted for her the previous one.
Yeah.
So Sydney is not going to be in favor of any let's stay strong and just take our chances.
Yeah, I hadn't considered this, but any one of those three guys getting the immunity necklace next could be really, really another fun tribal council.
Yeah, yeah. Although, which of them? I suppose Ty could.
I mean, whoever gets it, they could just split up.
No, I'm just
Ty's
trying to think which of them is most likely to win a challenge.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I mean, Jason and Scott are good in challenges, but I don't know if they're necessarily got the things you need to win one of these individual challenges. But then, who knows what the individual challenge is going to be.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Sarah, anything else from this episode that you wanted to get to?
I don't think so.
Okay, because just
a little note on women's alliances. Can we just point out that Debbie was voted out by the very women's alliance she had tried to put together? So that is in favor of my "do not talk about women's alliances" argument.
There you go. Perfect week to have you on. It really was. Getting to meet you and for this. Before we get out of here, I definitely do want to hear your take on something Dom and I talked about last week. The season 34 cast rumors. And I know some people out there are potentially going to not want to hear about this, so this would be the time to tune out if you are one of those people. But I will reiterate, obviously this hasn't been cast, let alone played yet. There is nothing we could possibly spoil other than who could potentially be out there. So I guess enough time has passed for those people to shut this off. Sarah, I know you have looked at the season 34 list. What is your general thought? Who are you really excited to see on there?
Oh, Sari.
Yeah.
Easily. I mean, it's like, it just reminded me all over again that Sari is still my favorite player of all time. So yeah, Sari definitely. I know somebody has been added to the list since you talked about it last week is Aubrey herself, which mm-hmm. is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been actually not an exclusive because it happened like literally an hour after we finished recording last week. Redmond put four more names on there. Let's talk about those four other names before we get into the rest of the list, actually, because this is going to be somewhat breaking news. Aubrey is on there. Sabrina Thompson, a second chance person who didn't make it on, is on there. Jeff Varner back in the mix, and another possible four-timer, Jonathan Penner. What do you think of those four names?
Mostly excited. Probably this will be a surprise, but Varner's probably the one I'm the least excited about, just because as fun as he was in Cambodia, I kind of feel he is entirely responsible for his own boot. He just came in playing too fast, too erratic. And I don't know if he's really going to be any different this time, and honestly, I don't know if I really need to see it again. He was fun, but I would not be upset if he got back on because he is a great character.
Yeah, it may be a little bit too soon for me and maybe a little bit too soon for Varner. I think like waiting 15 years between seasons is not what you want to do. And I also think waiting like a year between seasons is not what you want to do.
Yes.
I think you want to wait like 2, maybe 3 years, refocus, learn some things about yourself, fade out of the spotlight. I think it's going to be exactly more of the same from Varner. I don't think he's going to slow down. I think he's going to want to and not be able to control himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sabrina is somebody I'm excited to see back in the mix because she was one of the people I was voting for to get on second chances. And she's probably not going to be one of the more popular people that people are excited about now, but I always liked Sabrina. I liked the fact that she didn't really know what she was doing in one world. Yet she actually played a pretty good social game and, you know, was in contention against Kim Spradlin, which is not what you'd expect. So
yeah.
I think knowing what she does know now with the experience, she's going to be a much more interesting player to watch.
Yeah, totally. I could definitely see Sabrina being a bit of a different character than the second time around. Although I could, again, see her being essentially what we saw in One World. I wouldn't be heartbroken either way if she's on there or not on there. Someone whose name I already mentioned, Jonathan Penner, is apparently back in the mix. Obviously, I'm a huge, huge Penner fan. I would love for him to be one of the four-timers. I don't, for whatever reason, it just feels unrealistic to me that Penner would go back out there, but I guess he's in talks to do it.
I think he'd go back out there. I mean, can he improve on his...
No.
No.
Unfortunately, I love him, but no, he's not going to win.
No, I mean, I would love for him to get further than seventh, which is always been the wall he's been up against, but no, I don't see him. But I am never, ever going to say no to Penner. He's, even if he's just on for one episode, he's going to bring value to that episode. So.
Yeah, totally on board. And as you mentioned, Aubrey has been added to be in the mix for this season. Really, really excited about that. I was really disappointed when she wasn't in the mix initially. So that's very cool. I would definitely love to see Aubrey back, regardless of how this season goes. She's been really, really one of the breakout stars here.
Yes, and I would like them to carry on casting the Aubreys of the world, because she's such a refreshing change from all the desperate attempts to recreate poverty.
1,000% agree. And it's also kind of inspiring that I think someone else, Sophie Clark, along those same lines, is also in the mix.
Yes, I was surprised to see Sophie and delighted to see Sophie.
Because, likewise.
Yeah, I think what you and Don were saying about how she'd be great to see Sophie edited as a villain instead of as a winner.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think that would be a brilliant role for her in the game. So.
Yeah. We have a lot of former winners back here in the mix. We have Danny and Earl, who I know. Danny, you don't even know who she is.
Yeah, I have not seen Danny's season. I always see very mixed things about Danny. So when I do get round to watching Guatemala, which hopefully will be this summer, I'm going to be very curious to see what I make of her.
Well, we have those two in the mix that I know a lot of people aren't too thrilled about. I am very much into the idea of seeing them back. We have Tony in the mix, Natalie Anderson, Mike Holloway, and Sandra. Who do you think has a decent shot of winning for a second or third time? Because I could honestly see a couple of these people potentially running it back.
Well, I think I would sort of agree with you. Definitely not Mike. Mike's the one I don't want to see back. I never really cared for Mike. There was something about him that always rubbed me up the wrong way, and didn't help that he was getting this hero edit, which is... Natalie, obviously, I'm always excited by. I don't know if you thought she could pull it off again. I don't know if she could.
I think it's possible. I think she's just going to be situated where she's going to be viewed as someone to be part of, like, the central, like, a trusted part of the Central Alliance early. She's good in challenges. I know she's definitely not going to be able to hide how, like, capable she is of making, like, big, bold, aggressive moves. But I still think she could very easily find herself, like, in a sweet spot post-merge in an all-star season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you that Tony couldn't do it. One thing I was considering is, do you think we are out of the era of the female winners of this, of these returnee seasons, seeing as we've had Jeremy, and before that, you know, we had Tyson. It was a half and half season,
right? And Cochran.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, yeah, based on those examples, we're certainly past the point where it seems to be the kind of tertiary woman who probably was a debatable casting choice in the first place, and thus no one was really afraid of her.
Yeah, it seems like that they sort of got on the radar of everybody, and they, I mean, I'm still quite impressed that Jeremy managed to pull off the win, because I never thought that such an obvious alpha male could win a returnee season. So Jeremy's kind of really opened a door there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he still wasn't like the most obvious alpha male in that season. You know, he had a lot of meat shields to hide behind. But so yeah, I could see somebody like Earl winning again.
Totally, yeah, I absolutely think either of Earl or Danny could win again. Yeah, I think a ton of these people could potentially win again. I don't see it, as you said, happening probably for Tony. Tony, as I think I said last time, probably my favorite player ever at this point. And while it's a little bit too soon for me, at least, to see him back, I don't feel like there was anything Tony ever could have done to fade away the image that he has garnered for himself. And I think that's totally fine. But I would love to certainly see Tony back out there trying.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to do something. He's probably going to take out somebody, and I'll be really mad at him for doing that before he goes. But yeah, he should be good entertainment value while he's there.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling through this list now. Yeah, any thoughts on Ozzy coming back? As a four-timer, because I feel
How old is Ozzy now? 34. I'm sort of waiting for him to become, you know, the Heroes versus Villains Colby, where he just lost all his magic.
You know,
if they keep bringing him back, that's going to happen. I'm okay with Ozzy coming back. I think it's inevitable, and I'm not. As long as there's no Redemption Island, I'm not afraid of Ozzy somehow pulling out a win. So.
How about Malcolm?
I'm okay. I actually quite like Malcolm. He grew on me. I was kind of anti him in Philippines just because I thought he was overrated. But no, he's grown on me. I think he's had a good amount of time since he last played that I'm okay with him coming back in a way that, you know, it didn't. I wasn't so happy with him coming back for Karamo and when he was like, you know, sort of the new hotness. But now he's had some time to sort of look back and change. And so I'd be okay with him coming back.
How about someone, one of my favorites, what are your thoughts on Carolyn Rivera?
Oh, I really like Carolyn. I remember, I think I said to you several times, I was sort of in with you throughout Worlds Apart on the ring with a lot of your takes on things. Carolyn was one of my favorites in that season. I felt that she was probably the most deserving winner. It would have been interesting to see her and Rodney go at it.
Yeah, I think Carolyn definitely still has a lot more she could bring to another season.
Yeah, I mean, Carolyn was interesting just because she would keep flipping, but she would always flip to friends. You know, it wasn't like she was flipping onto the bottom. She would flip and she would be in tight with that group of people. So she had a really interesting game style. And she didn't get torn apart that badly by the jury either, which is, I think she is we've had this trend recently of the older women getting absolutely ripped to pieces by the jury. And the jury were pretty benevolent towards Carolyn. They just weren't going to award her the win when they had Golden Boy Mike in there.
Right, I think she wins the season if Mike doesn't run the table.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of debate about Rodney being surprisingly popular with the jury, so we'll never know. But yeah, I think Carolyn would certainly, she did an amazing job, and I would like to see her get a second chance at it.
Yeah, last one, at least for me, that I would love to hear, someone who came up a little earlier and who was actually at the live know-it-alls, Andrea Belkey back in the mix. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like Andrea. I know some people don't, but I kind of liked her in Redemption Island when she came back from Redemption Island and she was suddenly, oh, that's it. I've got to go gung-ho now. I need to start playing the game. And it didn't work, of course. But I liked her, the way she tackled the game in Karamoan. I'd be okay with seeing her again. I think on the whole, I am pro Andrea Belkey. I'm not saying that if it were down to a vote again, which it apparently isn't going to be, I don't know if she'd necessarily make my ballot. I'm much more excited about seeing somebody like Aubrey or Cerie or Carolyn. But yeah, I'm totally okay with seeing Andrea come back. I think of these female players, she's, you know, young, pretty female players, she's one of the ones who's got the most proven game to her.
Anyone else that hasn't come up that you would really like to see back?
Let's look down this list. I think we've probably covered it. Nobody else has. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think there's a few people here. I think my main take on it most is that I think it's too soon for returnee season again. I'd be much happier waiting till next year.
Okay, I mean, I definitely wouldn't object to that, although I do really feel like I'm optimistic that it looks like they're pulling from the pool of returnees that we had always, like, wished they would start pulling from, at least partially, with people like, at least for me, Danny and Earl, and we certainly saw that with, like, Kimmy Kappenberg and Jeff Varner and all, you know, Shane Powers and Terry Dietz coming back during Second Chance or whatever. I love that they're, like, kind of opening the, you know, diving down into, like, the depths of Survivor history and pulling out some of the people that I would have always really liked to see get another shot. So, and also, it looks like, based on at least Cambodia and the last few returning seasons, like, the gameplay is just not even comparable for the most part compared to most episodes of all newbie seasons. And, like, I said last time, I totally understand the people who don't love the all returnee seasons. I wouldn't hate it at all if they started doing it like every four seasons or so.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel. Like, not every year, but every other year.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah,
returnee
season. I think that would be a really good balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you very much for having me. I should also thank Pierre Virilainen as well, who I believe was the one who told you to ask me.
I got a text from, or a direct message from Dom as we were sitting there waiting for the live know-it-alls to start, saying to find a guest host. And by the way, Pia is my spirit animal. One of my favorite people that I met the entire trip down there. She was fantastic.
She was great. She really was so much fun.
She was awesome. As were you. And it was really a treat meeting you and podcasting with you. Let's do it again sometime.
Yes, let's. And definitely just do another live know-it-all sometime. We need to try and get Dom out.
Yeah, for sure.
Bit harder for him, but he needs, if he could fork out to come to the States for whatever it was he came for recently, he could come for a live know-it-alls.
Yeah, sure. Well, I believe it was robhasawebsite.com/author/Sarah Freeman to find your blogs.
Yes, I did, and I did a write-up of the Know-It-Alls event recently, so...
Yeah, I read that. It was great. It was really a lot of fun.
It's probably the only blog you've read of mine for the past year or so, so thank you for doing that.
Okay, it's not you, I don't read anything.
I know it's you don't read.
I don't read anything.
I'm not expecting you to read my blogs, but I was very touched you did read that one.
I don't mean I don't read any Survivor stuff. I don't read books. I don't read magazines. I don't read anything.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. I understand there are people with that perception in the world. I think you're all crazy, but...
Listen, I wish I could get into it. I am so jealous of the reading people, but for what I can read Twitter and I can read Wikipedia and that's about it. Otherwise, I'd much rather be watching TV.
Okay.
It's at CHANNON Sarah is the Twitter handle, and thank you once again for coming on. It was such a treat.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, you can find me at Colin Stone. Dom will, I believe, be back next week. He can be found at DomHRV. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care.